to welcome Judith Tizard to share some words with us. Many of you, I'm sure, know the Honourable Judith Tizard, but particularly for those of you who haven't come from New Zealand, she is the Minister responsible for the National Library, the Minister for Arts, Culture and Heritage. And I'm not sure if she has any other portfolios, but those are definitely the most relevant ones for today. So thank you, Judith, and we welcome you to the stand.
Thank you very much, Susie. I acknowledge, of course, Penny Carnaby, the National Librarian and Chief Executive of the National Library, Dr. Brian Opie, the Executive Director of the Humanities Council, and I have to say how delighted I am that the Humanities Council has survived and is thriving. It's a great idea that I think its time has certainly come long time ago, but we've struggled. To Dr. Anne Fitzgerald from the School of Law, Queensland University of Technology, and Katerina Marak, the CEO of Creative Commons International. It's an enormous pleasure to be here today to celebrate this event and the launch of Creative Commons Aotearoa New Zealand licences. I don't have to tell anyone here how significant this is as a milestone. For our artists, our writers, our scientists, our open source devotees, in fact everybody who creates and uses content across New Zealand and hopes to have it used across the world. I believe we are the 41st country in the world to join this movement, and I believe it is probably going to be one of the most important movements worldwide. And I really am excited that we will now have access to a practical and free tool tailored to suit a unique New Zealand situation, allowing us to share work, to adapt it, to adopt it, to reuse it, to remix it, and to be legal. I'm always fascinated by the number of organisations representing copyright holders who tell me it's all right for people to be a little bit illegal. And as many of you will know, I am not only Associate Minister for the Arts, I have the great joy to work with the Prime Minister who chose to be Minister for the Arts because she felt that New Zealand has spent 15 or more years worrying about the cost of everything and had actually forgotten the value of being New Zealanders. And so Helen is the minister and I am the associate. I sort of do the operational stuff, but she of course has to argue for the budget, which is an enormous advantage for a minister outside cabinet. I'm also associate minister for commerce, and I asked for the intellectual property area because of my concern, amongst other things, for the slow response that we'd had to digital issues, but also because I was appalled at the NZIER report in 1996, which the then National New Zealand First Government depended on as they repealed the ban on parallel importing of a range of products, where they said that New Zealanders are net users and consumers of copyright, therefore it should be as cheap and as poorly protected as possible. And it seemed to me a rather bizarre view on a country that had prided itself on its innovation and its creativity here as the last country to be settled by both Polynesian and Pākehā in the world. We've had to invent a bit, and I think it might be something we're quite good at, even if the number eight fencing wire myth is not quite ubiquitous. But I had also sat through the 1994 Copyright Act, or Bill as it then was, coming out of the TRIPS agreement through to the World Trade Organization, and had seen the vast marshalling of vast interests which were going to run us over and squash us very flat, including, it seemed to me, taking up a much of what I thought was unique about New Zealand and taking control of that away from people who had either created that or been the custodians of it. So I have those three portfolios. As on that, then last election I decided, having done a lot of work with Te Papa on issues around being a national museum for Māori and Pākehā and all of the cultures in New Zealand, having worked long and hard to get the idea of traditional knowledge into the Ministry of Economic Development's intellectual property work stream with enormous enthusiasm, which was received with enormous enthusiasm by the staff. And many of you will know that on Thursday night we finally released the Māori Guide to Intellectual Property, and I want to acknowledge Erica Gregory, who was my private secretary for commerce, who did a large part of that in her own time, because her managerial masters kept telling her it was not on the work programme. But Erica and I and a number of others thought it was incredibly important, and getting that guide out was, our view, was the first thing we needed to do in the traditional knowledge area, because so many people confuse intellectual property with the protections that are needed around traditional knowledge. And we wanted to make it really clear what IP was and what it wasn't. And so I hope that that guide will be useful to many people. But then I, having worked with a range of organisations, for example Creative New Zealand, where we were able to fund and launch the Māori trademark Toi Iho, a quality-based peer review for Māori artists to protect the fact that they were working as Māori in a Māori environment. I watched again and again as visitors to New Zealand went to Hokitika or somewhere else on the West Coast looking for punamu and came back delighted with the Taiwanese carved British Columbian jade that they had bought, with absolutely no idea that there was actually a difference in the workmanship and the design. So we now appear, we're particularly now Ngāi Tahu own punamu. We hope that that issue will not be treated with such contumely. But even though we have all of that work, I also wanted to get the National Library, which seemed to me to be the hub and the storehouse of much of the knowledge of how information had to be dealt with and where information had come from and on what conditions, along with the National Archive, into that major discussion that was happening in the commercial on one side and creative and cultural area on the other. And I want to acknowledge the National Library for the astonishing work they have done. There are many challenges going forward with this work, but I think at the heart, most New Zealanders seem now to understand that respect is the issue. Understanding that other people's work and other people's ideas, whether they are from traditional sources or are the spontaneous and creative work of one person, is necessary. We need, if we want to be truly respected for our own creativity and our own work, to respect others. We need to consult. There is the wonderful example of the Reserve Bank deciding that as an acknowledgement to Māori, they will put one of the most important images for Māori, that of Pukaki, on the 20-cent coin. They did this in 1990, our sesquicentennial year. They asked advice from Te Puna Kōkiri, and were told to go and discuss it with Arawa, who calmly and pleasantly said, yes, certainly you may use Pukaki. Unfortunately, Arawa do not own Pukaki. He is a tūpuna of Ngāti Whakaawe. And Ngāti Whakaawe have been really pissed off ever since. And as the chair of the Pukaki Trust, Waitangi Treaty Settlement Trust, I have been delighted to facilitate a process where the now Governor of the Reserve Bank, I tried to get the previous one, but he was less willing to be involved, to apologise to Pukaki, to put the issue of whether they were going to reissue the Pukaki 20-cent coins before we changed to the new forms of coins, and then they decided to put Pukaki on the new coin. What Ngāti Whakaawe have asked, they have acknowledged that this honour to their great tūpuna is a significant one, and they are happy to have him there. But what they have asked is that each year five young people from Rotorua, they have not specified that they must be Ngāti Whakaawe, just five young people from Rotorua, 15-year-olds, will come down and spend a day in the Reserve Bank. They will go and have lunch at Government House. I or someone else will receive them at Parliament, and that will happen every year for in perpetuity, in recognition of that relationship of those people and that place to that image. It was an interesting exercise, and I have to say that Dr. Bollard did it beautifully, more gracefully than many. But it is, I think, interesting that I, as a Minister outside Cabinet, have been the one to pull these issues through. I came into the arts because I feel very strongly that we have something of our values and our creative views and our history, our whakapapa, that we need to tell ourselves and our children, but we also need to tell the world. I often use the words of David Putnam, the British film producer, who said in his book, The Undeclared War, that the American film industry has had a symbiotic relationship with the American government since the beginning of that industry, not necessarily because government understood that film was going to be a huge and worldwide industry, but more because that industry is first about selling American values and American goods to American people and worldwide than any other purpose. It seems to me that New Zealand values and indeed New Zealand goods can be sold in a very similar way. In fact, it was wonderful to get to the point where I could argue with the Minister of Tourism we should just put all the tourism money into film and that would solve all of our problems. Damien O'Connor wasn't quite so cheerful about that. But I too have struggled with issues like a fair use clause for New Zealand music and films that have, because of the commercial arrangements around them, become unavailable for ordinary use, ordinary seeing and ordinary study in New Zealand. And it seems to me, just on the basis that New Zealand taxpayers have put an enormous amount of money into those films, that a fair use clause is a reasonable thing. Heck. So all of these issues have been, I have been struggling with them and many others over the last many years, so I'm really delighted to see that at this seminar today that many of you have been thinking about the same things. We need licences that reflect one of the great strengths of this digital age, which is the freeing up and accessing of content, providing, we hope, universal access. I mean, I'm really excited with the work that the National Library has done, which we hope will see every thesis written in a New Zealand university online in reasonable time. What is fascinating is how panic-stricken a lot of people who've written theses are. Christ, I don't want that out! But like all freedom, it comes with responsibility, and I go back to that word respect. There is a need for responsibility around managing content, both digital and physical, so that we don't lose all of those ideas, all of that knowledge that it holds. I mean, how fascinating to go to Alexandria and see at the rubbish tip papyrus scrolls being unearthed, which has much of the storehouse of the whole of human knowledge. You then go back to Ephesus, which was looted by Mark Antony, and all of those that information taken to Alexandria and then, of course, lost. And I got a postcard from a friend who was in Alexandria recently, which had a photograph of their fabulous new library. And the assertion was that if the original library had not been destroyed, human beings would have been on the moon about 1600. So let us remember that no matter how good we are and how good our stores are, we depend worldwide on respect and storage and access for knowledge for our well-being and the well-being of the planet as well as humankind. So I think the work that the National Library has done leading the digital content strategy has been vital. The work we are doing about the digital heritage collection going forward has been absolutely fascinating. looking at all of those blogs and wikis and web pages and all of that government material is boggling to start with. I thought the government sector's report about the authenticity is a fascinating issue. You may have seen, and I hope there's no media here, but I'll probably be quoted anyway. I was bloody annoyed when one of my colleagues who had responsibility for births, deaths and marriages decided, right, we'll solve the problem of the fact that these records, which have been public since the beginning of the keeping of these records, will now be tied up because people are abusing them in identity fraud. Why don't we just say only the people entitled to them get certificates? And only the certificates can be used to identify someone, and everyone else can have access to the records. It seemed really simple, but they didn't ask us. However, they're getting there slowly. We are trying to bring a whole of government approach to all of these things, but we still have to decide in the library and in the archives how far we extend this role that we're keeping. Does it mean that every Facebook profile has to update, a New Zealander makes, every email that we write irritatedly to each other has to be kept? Where would history be if we hadn't kept all of those personal letters and personal notes? But please God, nobody go through my email until I'm dead. My mother keeps saying she's put a 100-year limit on hers, and she keeps saying that she thinks she has to be dead and rotted because otherwise they'll dig her up and shoot her. These all have both sides. So protecting and enabling our digital content is something that we have been focusing on very strongly. David Cunliffe sends his, as Minister for Communication, sends his greetings today. I was at a meeting with him this morning. But as a digital minister, I've been really involved with this, and I know that it's going to be, it's just the start. The digital content strategy was launched in Parliament last month, and I think it's a great opportunity to educate people, to inform people, but to truly promote how New Zealanders do things as well as what we do. I think that our place in the digital world may well be rather bigger than our geographical space. And this wouldn't be a speech from a minister without mentioning commerce. I happen to be the Associate Minister for Commerce. But we know that the three aspects that were identified in the digital content strategy government, authoritative work, academic, commerce, commercial work, which could be the commercialisation of work from either the community or from authoritative work, or stuff that was initiated from a commercial basis, as well as the community, the commons. Content has economic value, and open source access is a very positive, has very positive economic opportunities for New Zealand. And we hope we totally get the link between New Zealand created and accessed digital content and our economic future. I'm delighted to see that, going back to the digital strategy, that the connectivity is getting rather more focus, forced rather recently. And if Telecom can give us all good broadband access in 4 years, that will be wonderful. I guess we will just be left with the question is, why haven't they done it in the last 20? However, we need to enable and empower our world-beating innovators and creative people to work in an environment of endemic premium Kiwi content, responding to the rest of the world, but I believe that we can also lead in many areas. And that's why the digital content strategy and its associated initiatives are very important. We also have responsibility to ensure we apply fair principles around copyright and acknowledging people's work, that respect word again. I'm absolutely fascinated in the schools I go to as Minister for New Zealand Music that we have got the message through that it's not all right to burn Kiwi music. It would be nice to get the message that it's not actually okay to burn anyone else's music, but I hear the issue that music is how we express ourselves. A song can be what it means to welcome a new child, to get married, to fall in love, to farewell a parent or a friend. Music is one of the things that we do it use to do all of those things. So it's very difficult for people to see that they have to pay at every stage. And I think that just as the music industry across the world has failed abysmally in their ability to move into this new technology, that things like Creative Commons licensing is the way that people like Madonna are going. And it's really interesting to see that happening so strongly in New Zealand, just because young New Zealanders saw that most New Zealand musicians aren't making a fortune. I loved the response that Arthur Basting got in the mid-90s, where he asked kids to bring their music collections to school, and 90% of it was burnt or taped in those days still. Now, what we find is it's still true, but not a way. They can usually produce the CD of New Zealand music. So, you know, we've got up to 20%. So today's launch and seminar has set the scene for the best of both worlds approach, where the licenses provided a way to protect work, but also encourage uses and knowledge of work. As a person who enjoys creativity and the outcomes of brilliant creative people and who has an active role in fostering those across New Zealand, I'm really looking forward to seeing more great New Zealand work out there, not just being created, but being shared, being accessed, being discovered, being adapted and trumpeted on a global stage. So I hope today's seminar has been about understanding and building awareness of the licenses. It's just the start of a journey, and I'll urge you all to go out and spread the word about all of the issues you've been talking today. They need to be discussed in educational institutions, across government, in universities, in businesses, but most of all in the community. As I talked to LIAC, the Library Information Advisory Council, Paul Reynolds came up with a lovely idea, which he credits back to Chris Batt, that what we are trying to do is to build a bank of New Zealand knowledge where every citizen has the power and the right to deposit and to withdraw to the extent of their ability and their needs. It seems to me that this is one of the vital parts of that bank. It's actually the gateway. So I know you've had a long day, on a Saturday no less, so I'm sure you want to get to your drinks and gossip. So I will wrap things up by congratulating and acknowledging all of you who have worked on bringing these licences to fruition and the groups who have supported them. I want to thank again Dr. Brian Opie, to Penny Carnaby, to Te Tauira Whiri, the Māori Language Commission, the Ministry of Education, and finally to UNESCO New Zealand as key partners and supporters of this initiative. I would also like to extend my thanks to everyone involved in developing the licences and participating in the seminar, Andrew Matangi, Susie Frankel, Susan Corbett, and finally to our international speakers, Dr. Anne Fitzgerald and Katerina Marak. Thank you all for coming here and for providing a New Zealand view on a worldwide movement, but also that worldwide movement's contribution to New Zealand. I hope you've all had a wonderful day. I hope that you have come to grips with new licences and their applications, what they have to offer you now and in the future. As you know, I am in the middle of the Digital Copyright Bill, and I look forward to trying to straddle that astonishing balance between the commercial interests and the rights of citizens to access information on machines they own legally and often with information that they have legally acquired. It is not an easy one, but I thank you very much for your contribution in taking this forward. You are right that education is vital, but at the heart of it, I believe, is the issue of respect.